kind of cool. It is.
Have you come around to that as the structure for a 4-day work week?
I mean, I wouldn't like despise it.
But you'd still prefer Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Or Monday.
Monday, we like for our job, though, Monday's always such an easy reaction day.
Right. But if everybody else in the world chooses Monday off on the 4-day work week.
Yeah, you're not going to decline it.
Right. So that's what you do, right? You know, because if nobody's working, what's the point in doing a radio show?
Sure.
So that's the, but yeah, I could, if they tell me it's Monday, Tuesday on, Wednesday off, Thursday, Friday on, I'm like, okay, I'll say no.
Yeah. It's just, you basically get two weekends.
Essentially. Yeah. You get two weekends. But, so there you go. That's the one I would just prefer the three in a row. But we've got a big show today. Mike McCarthy coming up at 6:30. We got the junk drawer, of course. And then, you know, we'll have Nick Eatman from DallasCowboys.com to preview the game against Philadelphia, which has a lot of missing pieces this week.
It does, and including one big one for the Cowboys for the remainder of the season with two games left to play, as the Cowboys announced yesterday that they are shutting down CeeDee Lamb for the remainder of the season. And this is something that... this is the statement exactly from the Cowboys. Additional examinations and scans this week on CeeDee Lamb's shoulder have determined that his injury has now progressed to a point that he will be listed as out for the remaining two games of the season. He will undergo a process of treatment and rehabilitation for his shoulder, is not currently expected to require surgery, and is projected to make a full recovery. The question that stands out to me is, did putting him out there, was any of that reckless? But like what did he end up making it worse? Or is it just a strategic decision now of like, you know what, this hasn't gotten better yet, let's just go ahead and from everything they've said, it does not sound like it was made worse. It just sounds like it's not going to get better until he stops, so right, let's just start getting him better.
Probably.
We asked Jerry about this on Tuesday, actually, the idea of, would you shut him down, or are you going to leave it up to the player? In fact, I think specifically it was, hey, is this a situation where you guys feel like you need to get him some rest, or do you just say, we're going to leave this up to CD, and this is what Jerry said?
We'll leave it up to the player. He'll certainly be advised by our medical people, but absolutely in this particular case, leave it up to the player, and we'll be monitoring that carefully.
You know what, right, Chop? You know what this seems to guarantee?
What?
They win their last two games. Because if there's one thing we've learned from this season, it's that the more that guys seem to go out of this lineup, the more they just seem to play better football. It's the most bizarre thing.
It really is. It really is. Maybe the starters aren't very good.
We were talking about this yesterday, and we'll talk about this a little bit later. I think we have it scheduled for 8 this morning. But we'll talk about it a little bit later. Just the idea of, hey, are they've shown themselves really good at evaluating talent and acquiring talent, as evidenced by all the Pro Bowlers and All Pros and top tier contracts they hand out and everything else. But have they figured out how to put that into a team? Like, have they actually figured out roster building? Because I think roster building and talent acquisition are two different things.
I totally agree. I think they're really good at talent acquisition. I think they're piss poor. I've said this before. We've done segments on this before. Like, they're just, they don't believe in positional value in terms of the draft. They're looking at just the best player available. They're obsessed.
They do seem to value offensive line.
They do. But they are obsessed with just, we got to get a good player, regardless of whether the position matters.
Sure. And like I said, we'll jump into all that at 8 o'clock today. I think that'll be a good conversation that we have. But
nothing
in general,
me off more than we need a defensive tackle. No, we don't.
We were talking about this yesterday, Choppy and I, when we were just on the phone and getting the show structured and figuring out what we want to do. If you take the last four games of 2020, when they had played really poorly overall in 2020, but they finished strong to get to 6-10. When you look at the last four games of 2020 and then all the different times that Cooper Rush has had to play since then, that's 17 games that they've had to play with a backup quarterback. Their record is 12-5.
Cowboys are 12-5 with a backup quarterback?
And that's over the course of... it was 2020, 21, 22, and 24, because Dak played every game in 23. But you're talking about Cooper Rush being...
If Sean Payton did that, they would genuflected his altar, but McCarthy does it, and nobody wants to give him credit for it.
It is, look, you do have to look at some of this through the lens of who are you playing. Like, that absolutely matters. But
when you have a backup,
but you cannot say over the course of 17 games, I don't care how poor your opposition is, you can't say that that's not impressive.
And when you have a backup quarterback, I really don't care who you're playing.
I'll say what this does show me is that if I'm going to give a really strong check in Mike McCarthy's favor of just like, hey, you can't take that away from him. What it does show is, and I want to ask him about this at 6:30. It does show that he has a scheme or a system that everybody at every level of the roster is comfortable coming in and executing. And this is something that he's I've heard him give this discussion before. This is back all the way when he was in Green Bay. I saw him at a coach's clinic where he had mentioned that Marty Schottenheimer had told him once upon a time that something to the effect of, hey, you got to make sure that think of play or players, not plays, or plays, not plays. It was one of those. In fact, the exact quote, as I have it here in front of me, he said that Marty Schottenheimer told him, don't think of plays, think of players. And the idea of just make sure that your scheme fits everybody.
Yeah.
Well, make sure that this isn't about I'm committed to this concept. Make sure that you're committed to these players and seeing them succeed and then building an offense around that. And going 12-5 with a backup quarterback over your last 17 games seems to say he's succeeded in that.
Yeah, that's smart. I just like when you have a backup quarterback in, I don't really look at who you're playing and worry about. Like, I would worry about it if you had the starter because, you know, to me, the moment that you no longer have a quarterback advantage, you no longer have a game advantage.
Oh, and look,
you know, and it's just a 50, it's a toss up.
And look, when I say they played some poor teams at the end of 2020 and different things like that, that's not, I'm just saying that as context.
Plus, I couldn't even tell you. You go back year to year, who was bad that year?
Well, that's
I assume it's the same crap teams that are always picking the top 10.
That's why I say it's just for context of the idea of just this is where they're at. You won a road game in Minnesota with Cooper Rush. That was a big deal. You won a game against Cincinnati here at AT&T Stadium in 2022 with Cooper Rush. You were competitive throughout that stretch in 22 when he was out. You won on the road against Washington, who's a playoff team this year. You just beat Tampa Bay, who is right there in contention for a playoff spot this year. Cincinnati, you were competitive in those games. So it's not anything to take away at all. But I think that that's as Jerry evaluates futures and different things like that, that's a big one that he's got to consider is, you know, the steady hand of how do we play when everybody goes down?
Yeah.
The bigger question then is just, Can we get that same sort of playing above expectation when the starters are in there? Because the problem oftentimes has been when the starters are in there, they've fallen short.
Well, yeah, and then you wonder, you know, how much what role is players? You know, to me, I always, regardless of whether it's starters or backups, you know, I generally put most of it on the players.
He might be. I think there's an argument to be made that Mike McCarthy's a top five coach in the NFL when you're talking about weathering a storm. When you're talking about getting through a mess, and it makes sense. He's a guy who's been in the NFL for 30 years. There's not much he hasn't seen.
Right. Garrett was good with that too, though. Garrett was good the day after the Josh Brent
stable
situation.
Stable, no doubt about it. I don't know that he was as good at just weathering personnel dropping like flies. That usually.
Oh, no. Personnel, absolutely not. You're totally right. The moment they had one guy missing, it was.
I mean, they had a record there for a while where when Sean Lee was out, they lost like 10 games in a row.
Yeah, it was crazy. Look at the Atlanta game in, 2017?
Yeah, they were missing a tackle and they couldn't block anybody.
Right. So, yeah, injuries for sure. Just specifically the Josh Brent game in Cincinnati.
It was a big deal. Yeah, that was a masterful job to keep guys focused.
But Mike has done a good job with the injuries. At least the injuries was quarterback.
And Nick Sirianni's going to have to show he can do it this week because it looks like there will be no Jalen Hurts, who missed practice again yesterday. And Thursday's usually a big practice for getting guys ready. So this looks like it will be Kenny Pickett, which you wonder how much does that legitimately matter versus if they're just going to lean into Saquon Barkley running the ball 40 times.
Well, they might, but look at this. I mean, last week, just go back to last week, right? Now, I know that Hurts got hurt on the second drive, in the middle of the second drive, but it was still seven. They still only had 7 points on the board.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you just take that drive away from Pickett and you just say that, you know, Hurts got them to the 30-yard line, you know, the plus 30. So let's say Jalen Hurts was responsible for 10 points. You know, he still scored 23 in the final three quarters. That's not terrible. Pickett wasn't awful in that game.
No, he wasn't awful.
He wasn't Jalen Hurts.
He wasn't great, is just the thing. But I mean, he's had to step in and, you know, do a couple different things and perform at a high level before for you know, Pittsburgh. And, you know, he's not anybody that is a franchise quarterback, but you look at, man, he's remarkably average with it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you're talking about a guy 14 touchdowns to 14 interceptions in 3 years in the NFL.
Yep. I mean, he's not great.
Also, a history of being able to, you know, come through with a drive when it matters most. He has 6 fourth quarter comebacks in his career. And that matters when you're talking about a guy who's had to step in and play in the fourth quarter of 24, 25 games. For six of those to be fourth quarter comeback wins, that's significant.
That's interesting. All right, very good. So, looks like Hurts is hurt for this week.
Think of that?
No. Oh. I did. Yes, I did. The NBA still won Christmas Day, though. And Pat Riley says the Mavs are not getting Jimmy Butler. We'll dive into that next. Mike McCarthy at 6:30 on The Fan.
Williams, shotgun snap, blitz is coming. Williams throws the ball up for grabs. The ball is intercepted. If Wallen comes near side, knocked out of bounds. The first takeaway of the game by the Seahawks could not have come at a better time. The fans head for the exits, and the Seahawks are going to win this ball game by a score of 6-3.
That was Seahawks radio. What an awful,
awful job by Peyton.
Football game.
Peyton,
what?
Look, when we pull highlights for these games, you need to pull a touchdown call.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. My bad. I didn't watch the game.
Why would you pull an interception?
Into the game, so I thought it was a good one, but I'll go back and find a touchdown.
I mean,
good luck.
Oh, wait. They didn't score any touchdowns.
They did not.
Never mind. Sorry, Peyton.
What an awful. Isn't that like the second straight Thursday night game without a touchdown? Didn't Rams Niners last week?
Oh, was that one? That was no touchdowns a couple weeks ago, wasn't it?
A couple weeks ago.
That was a couple weeks back.
What an awful game. The last four primetime games that we have had in the NFL. Green Bay beat Chicago, New Orleans, 34-0. And then you had Chiefs 29-10 over the Steelers, Ravens 31-2 over the Texans, and then this abomination of football.
It's pretty gross.
I was driving in, and I don't remember what show it was, but they were saying, oh, you know, and this is what Caleb Williams made some nice throws yesterday. Like what? They scored 3 points. Like tell me how much you want to prop up Caleb Williams' career to say that he made some nice throws in a 3-point game.
If you combine what the Steelers, Texans, Seahawks, and Bears scored, and the Seahawks won, if you combine what those four teams score, they lose by more than a possession to the Ravens and the Chiefs.
And the Packers.
Yes. Now the Chiefs were, it's technically only a possession because it's a possession and a 2-point conversion. But a touchdown and a field, or a touchdown and extra point, don't get it because you lose 29-21 to the Chiefs and 31-21 to the Ravens.
Gosh.
Just awful football.
Good gosh. That's awful. Yeah, that's terrible. Wow.
Do we really want to expand this to an 18-game season?
Yeah, I mean, I'll ask Mike how difficult these random day games are. You know, like at this time of year, the schedule gets all wonky and you're playing Saturday, Wednesday. It's just throwing you off. It's got to throw you off. Next year, they'll do Friday, Tuesday or whatever. Or I guess next year will be regular Thursday because that's when Christmas is. But it just throws everything off. I don't know. But what is the Luka news we have?
Luka Doncic, who we were waiting for a report on that calf strain, and it is a significant one. Last night, Shams Charania had the news. Mike Curtis from Dallas Morning News, friend of the show, confirmed it afterwards that Luka Doncic will be out at least 30 days. They're going to reevaluate him in a month. on that left calf strain. And as Mike Curtis points out, Luka has already missed 8 games this season. So missing a month's worth of games means he will not be eligible for MVP or all NBA honors due to the NBA's 65 game requirement. So
no one's dying.
That's it for Luka Doncic on the awards front for this season. Not that he was playing at a mm-hmm. level that was MVP, but I mean, he was right at the top as one of the MVP favorites entering this year.
I don't care about postseason awards.
No, now if you're an NBA player,
if you're an NBA player, you do, because that's
the All NBA and the Supermax, yeah, that matters. And so it's you're talking about money at that point. But I mean, Luka's already in position to where he's
already got enough of that,
got his deal, so he's good. But yeah, this is, you're gonna be without Luka for a month, which is not great, but I mean, they played really well earlier this season without him, so you hope they just carry that over for the next month or so.
Yep. Pat Riley says they are not trading Jimmy Butler, so the Mavericks had any inclination of trying to get him, which I like Jimmy, but I wouldn't have done that. I don't want to ruin their depth. Even though you're getting a star player, I don't want to ruin their depth either way. That's their calling card. They say he ain't going anywhere.
Yeah, and I love the actual statement. Yeah. From Pat Riley. We usually don't comment on rumors, but all this speculation has become a distraction to the team. It's not fair to the players and the coaches. Therefore, we will make it clear we are not trading Jimmy Butler. Well, if he wants out bad enough, you might.
Yeah, I think if there's anybody who's not going to give in to the player, it might be Pat. He's old enough, true, with enough skins on the wall. He'll be like, whatever, dude. I do what I want. I'm Pat
but
Riley.
He seemed a little frustrated with Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, he does.
So yeah. I don't know why he would want him around, other than just that seems like digging in for no reason.
I think it's something that you would absolutely love, because you dig in.
I dig in for no reason all the time.
For no reason all the time.
I'm not directing a team, though. If I was, that'd probably I'd be very detrimental to a team.
Yes, you would. But I don't know. I don't know that Pat actually cares.
Which team do you think you could effectively run as a general manager, or come closest? Because obviously neither one of us is qualified to do it. But NBA,
I mean, I'm
MLB, I think we're just as qualified, or NFL,
as 85% of the general managers out there.
Which, stop it. Which do you think you could?
I mean,
the Mavs
literally hired a shoe salesman, and he's like a top 5 GM.
But he's a recruiter.
Yeah, but he's like a top 5 GM in the league, and he's just like a shoe
salesman. So which one do you think? You think NBA could run most effectively?
Well, NBA, all you need to do is get one guy.
MLB's so hard, because you got to have all the minor league stuff under control. And I know that they've got different people throughout the organization that kind of oversee different parts, but man, that's a lot to have on your plate.
The NBA and the NFL are the easiest if you hit on one guy. If you hit on the quarterback or you hit on a superstar player in the NBA or the NFL, that's the easiest, because then you're just set. Baseball is the most difficult, but I know baseball the best, so I would say that one.
All right, fair enough.
I just followed the most closely. And then real quick, before we get to Mike McCarthy here, we'll save that. We'll save the NBA race, because they dominate. I'm going to pair this with the NFL, because the NFL numbers on Netflix are out.
Ooh.
And they did better than they thought they were going to do. Be honest with you. All right, Mike McCarthy, Cowboys head coach, next on the Fan. Good morning, DFW. To Sean and RJ here on 105 through the Fan. I'm RJ Choppy. He's Bobby Belt, Peyton, and Caitlin alongside. Sean is, what did I do?
Peyton.
I didn't say that.
You said Peyton and Caitlin.
I think I said Peyton.
Okay,
we'll go to the replay.
Yes.
Sean is back next week, and it is time, as we do every Friday here on The Fan, to be joined by the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys, Mike McCarthy. Morning, Mike. How you doing, pal? Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas. I hope everybody had a great week. You know, obviously Sean's having a great 2 weeks.
I know, right? Yeah, we didn't have to worry about me last week, and then this week he's off. How did you handle Christmas at the McCarthy household?
Just family time. Just hung out with Jess and the girls, and got a little extra sleep. So it was a good day.
Nice,
very, very family oriented.
So I wanted to ask you. I don't know if you saw last night's Thursday night game, and you know the schedule is so crazy this time of year. You had Wednesday games, and we don't have Wednesday games very often in this league. Like how difficult is this time of year to manage for a football coach?
Oh, it's a challenge. I mean, you have to, you know, everybody has to go through it. But I think it's just like anything. It's it's what you believe in, and because I think doing schedules now for almost 2 decades, you have to get the work done. I mean, that's your responsibility to make sure the team is prepared and trained to win the next game, particularly on Christmas week. But I've tried it different ways earlier in my career, and frankly, I was never comfortable with the players and coaches working on Christmas. So, you know, we worked ahead, moved up everything as far as what we needed to do earlier in the week. So we worked Monday, Tuesday. Everybody was home for Christmas on Wednesday, and then we had a longer day yesterday, and we'll have a little longer day today. So we're still getting all the work done. But you could just see the appreciation and actually their energy, and that's been very consistent over my time, both in Green Bay and here in Dallas, that, you know, when you do give them that day off, the energy is incredible the next day.
Coach, we got the news yesterday that CeeDee Lamb is done for the remainder of the season. He's obviously been dealing with that shoulder issue and played a couple of really good games even with it. Just talk about his resilience and his toughness in the 5 years that you guys have spent together, because he's not a guy that, you know, is frequently talked about as being banged up or hurt, but obviously guys get banged up at the end of the season. So just talk about his toughness and the way that he's played through that.
Well, Bobby, you didn't even give me a follow-up on my Christmas schedule.
it was a great point. I thought you laid it all out there. I thought it was a great point.
I didn't get the memo. We want a script this morning or something? We got a bunch of things we got to knock out? But no, just kidding. CD, you know, obviously, well, we all know what he means to our football team. And, you know, he's been playing, you know, with the shoulder for some time. And, you know, when they had the scans and the examination, it just, you know, it was clearly worse than it's been. So, and, the risk is too high to play this week. Even if this was if we were in week three, this would probably be the same decision. So, it's important for him to, you know, shut it down and start rehabbing.
Coach, you know, you talk about that Christmas schedule and just the positive energy.
You don't have to go back.
No. I'm tying it into my next question. I'm tying it into my next.
Bobby's got a conscience.
There you go.
You know better than that.
Coach, no, but when you talk about guys who need to step up over these last 2 weeks, because obviously you guys are playing now without the playoffs in sight, but guys who you would like to see really step up and take advantage of this opportunity with CeeDee down. Is this something, a good opportunity for Jonathan Mingo or Ryan Flournoy? How do you look at the guys who need to step up and show you something here in these final 2 weeks?
Yeah, I think clearly you can start with the young players. And I know the veteran players, they want to finish. And, you know, you can start on offense. Some of the things that we've been doing well over the last month, starting with the offensive line. You know, we didn't run the ball, this past week against the Buccaneers, the way we've been running it, the 3 weeks prior. So I know that as a unit, the offensive line really wants to, you know, have a good day there in Philadelphia, and it'll be a key to the victory too, going into that place too. So, but yeah, you could go right down the line with rookies. You know, I want to see Tyler Guyton, you know, take a step, Cooper Beebe, you know, all those guys. But this is such valuable, you know, work for all these players. I mean, you talk about the preseason being short, and there's nothing like game reps. There's nothing like game reps on the road. So, and there's nothing like game reps that lead to winning. So, I look at all of our guys that just have an opportunity to continue to play and keep, you know, keep playing to win, and it's something that we can build off in the off season.
Mike McCarthy joining us here at 105 through the Fan. Just curious, when you're deciding to let a guy play or not when he's got an injury, and it doesn't matter if it's as a head coach or when you were part of other programs early in your career, how much of player input goes into that versus just the training staff?
Well, I think at the end of the day, every player is control of it. It's his body, and no one knows your body better than you do. So, it's not just a conversation for when an injury occurs. You know, it's because this time of year, you know, every player in this league is dealing with, you know, things that have accumulated over the course of a season. So, it's an ongoing conversation. You know, there's a reason why they do prehab. You know, they don't wait till they get hurt to go into rehab. So they're always working on their bodies. I mean, that's why we invest the time in that we do on the stay program on Fridays. It's the reason why these guys spend so much time on their own investing it. So, yeah, so that conversation, frankly, is ongoing. It's really the state of where they are, and if they can, you know, perform and go out and, and give us a chance to win as a team, and then they're part of that conversation to play that week.
Coach, I went back and tried to look at how many games you've coached where the team was officially eliminated, and it's less than 10. How different has this week felt?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's different. It really hit me, driving home after the Buccaneers game because it was such a punch in the gut. Because I was in the locker room when the Philadelphia and Washington game concluded, and it's different. I've been fortunate. You're always playing, for a playoff spot this time of year. But I think it's like anything. It's a time of adversity. It's a time where you're always preparing for change, adjustment, and emphasis, and that's always been the filter for growth that I believe in, and it's kind of put me into that mindset, earlier than normal.
How's Cooper Rush played differently that you've seen since the first time they played? You all played Philly.
Oh, I think Cooper's just more into a rhythm. Clearly, I mean, Philadelphia was the first start, and just the way the game started for him, he never really truly got into a rhythm. You could see it in his feet, but I think he's played really good football for us here, especially I thought the Buccaneers game was a game that was going to be a lot of uphill running because just the way they set their defensive front and the way they commit to stopping a run, and I thought he did a great job of just really staying on his back foot, getting through his progressions and getting the completions that we needed.
So, Coach, the last 17 games, full season worth, that you've had to play with a backup quarterback here, you guys are 12-5. I know you've said before that Marty Schottenheimer taught you the philosophy of don't think of plays, think of players, in terms of making sure the system fits your players rather than players having to fit your scheme or your system or whatever you want to do. Do you think that that's been the overriding philosophy that has gotten you guys to that 12-5 record over those last 17, is the fact that, hey, this is a system and an offense that anybody can feel comfortable in regardless of when they step in?
Yeah, definitely, Bobby. I think clearly, it's a starting point philosophically. I don't think there's a question about that. But, I mean, there are so many factors and elements involved in dealing with the adversity of injuries. And just the credit really ultimately goes to the locker room. I mean, because the locker room has to accept the next man up mentality. And they have to stick, they got to keep the belief, high, and because that's where the confidence comes. Because you win with confidence in the National Football League. You have no chance to be successful in this league if you don't have real confidence. And I think our guys have done a really, really good job of that.
Mike McCarthy joining us here on 105 Through the Fan. He is brought to you by Black Rifle Coffee Company, the official coffee of the Dallas Cowboys. Saquon's having a tremendous year. I mean, he's always been a great player, but like, does he look any different than what he did when he was with the Giants?
Oh, I would say, he's, he's always been, a gifted player without a doubt. So I would say physically, I wouldn't say he looks any different, but he's more mature. He looks very comfortable in this offense. This offense is built around the run, and, he's the feature player, and he's having a great year. I think what I appreciate about the way he plays is, the way he hammers it up in there for the, 4, 5, 6, 7 yard consistent runs. But you tend to forget this guy can go the distance. He has great breakaway speed and it's been a huge, huge part of their success. You look at these performances that he has, but it's almost weekly where he's banging a run for 30, 40, 50 yards. This is clearly the best, that I've seen him play, but he's always, there's a reason why he was a top draft pick. He's a very, very gifted player.
He's closing in on the NFL single season rushing record, Eric Dickerson's record that's stood for 40 years. Is that a point of competitive pride at all for your defense? You think of just like, hey, we're not going to help contribute to letting this guy break a record. We're not going to be part of this.
We're really not about the record. We're really just about, keeping him in check and winning the game. We're not thinking about that. And you talk about a great Hall of Fame running back in Eric Dickerson. It's you know, it's a tribute to, you know, to any running back to even be in part of that conversation, because that's definitely a record that has stood for quite some time.
What is the mode of preparation, or how do you guys look at things when you've got a primary quarterback in Jalen Hurts who is dealing with an injury and you're trying to figure out who you're getting ready for? How do you split up that time preparing for two different quarterbacks who are very different stylistically?
Well, you know, the good thing is you've played a lot against Jalen, so you feel like you have an understanding of how he plays, and obviously he had a big game against us in the first game, you know, particularly getting out of the pocket. So, you know, you really have to spend your time on Kenny Pickett, and just to make sure we're in tune, how we feel about him as a quarterback and how we feel they're going to use him. And, you know, there's a lot of tape in the Washington game because Jalen's injury was obviously very early in the game. So, yeah, that's just, you know, just part of preparation. And, you know, and it's not against the law for them to go, you know, play with two quarterbacks this week too. So, I mean, you got to be ready for the whole crew.
I guess you don't have to worry about the tush push though, right?
I don't know about that. Yeah, I hope not.
It's a tough play. Hey, Coach, we appreciate it. Good luck on Sunday, and then don't party too hard on New Year's.
Oh, you bet. Happy New Year, everyone.
All right, goodbye. Mike McCarthy, brought to you by Black Rifle Coffee Company, the official coffee of the Dallas Cowboys.
It was good. He was in a nice jovial mood. They're playing loose.
Yeah.
And they're still playing committed and ready to attack this thing. That is, I'm sitting here trying to figure it out. I was telling you during the break, I'm trying to figure out what other head coaching records are with backup quarterbacks in that same time span, because it's not anywhere close, I don't think, in terms of now obviously they lost the first several with Andy Dalton in 2020. So it's just over the last 17, because you're taking the back end of 2020. But still, I mean, you look at Nick Sirianni in his time in Philadelphia, 1-3 with a backup quarterback. Daboll, 5-12. Dan Campbell, 0-3. Kevin O'Connell, 3-6. Matt LaFleur, 2-1. Raheem Morris, 1-0. Dave Canales, 1-4. So, I mean, you know, you're not seeing a lot of similar success in terms of being able to win games consistently with a backup quarterback. Because there's 13 victories over the course of 5 years with a backup quarterback. That's pretty significant. It's a compelling argument.
Yeah, it's interesting because I don't know how much it says about Cooper Rush in general that he can execute a game plan really well.
Yeah, I think it's a blend. They complement each other. Mm-hmm. It's they work hand in hand.
Because a lot of quarterback play, like, you know, unless you have the guy that is like calling his own plays, a lot of it is, are you executing the game plan?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Cooper seems to be able to execute the game plan pretty well. I mean, look, it's also, you know, the coaching staff on not just Mike, but the entire staff, like, to get the team ready to play with a backup quarterback, you know, shouldn't go unnoticed.
No, absolutely. I think it's definitely a check in his favor and one that needs to be acknowledged and considered when you're talking about where things are at. Like I said, my biggest thing is just I would like to see that carry over, obviously, into where they're playing at a more consistent level in big moments with their normal set of guys, their normal roster, which, again, we'll get into that 8 o'clock about the roster construction. Would you like to downplay this Philadelphia story? Because you didn't seem to be too worked up about the Nick Sirianni, Zach Ertz issue.
So this is the deal, and I didn't really care about this. So after the game, we'll let Jeff McClain explain it. He was on Uncovering the Birds podcast.
Yeah, this is their podcast where it's kind of like a deep dive 30 for 30 weekly thing that they do for the Philadelphia Inquirer. But this was a story told, and this blew up yesterday.
The bad blood was on display during the game and after. Oddly enough, between Sirianni and former Eagles tight end Zach Ertz. The two had to be separated during post-game handshake. Sirianni didn't have much to say about it after the game.
What was the nature of the interaction with Zach Ertz after the game? It looked like he was pretty...
Congrats. Both of us say congrats to each other.
Ertz told an Inquirer reporter, I'll let him comment on what was said. To me, we just exchanged holiday pleasantries and kept it moving. But according to sources close to the incident, here's what really happened. Ertz went to shake Sirianni's hand, could tell the coach was agitated, so instead gave him a high five. Sirianni didn't like the intensity of Hurts' hand slap and mocked him because he had only one catch and told him he essentially did nothing to contribute to the Commanders' win. Hurts took exception and got in Sirianni's face, but the coach's escort, as always, Dom DeSandro, jumped in and held Hurts back and ushered a defeated Sirianni to the tunnel. Sirianni later called Hurts and apologized over a Zoom conference call, sources said. The former Eagles tight end played for the coach in his first year in Philadelphia before getting traded to the Cardinals midseason. Publicly, Hurts and Sirianni were complimentary of each other after their short stint together in 2021.
And you think this is a big nothing burger?
It's not that I think it's a nothing burger. I don't hate this, but like athletes shaking hands at the end of a football game is one of the great and dumbest things about the NFL. Like, you want to do that at, you know, fine. But you get to the NFL level and you get a couple of overly competitive idiots like these two morons, and you're going to get something like this that happens. And then you got to get Big Dom out here to be the hero.
Hey!
Again. You know who should be shaking hands? Golfers. Tennis players. Gladiators, man. Gladiators shouldn't be, I don't know. Not for me.
Fair enough.
But QBs and head coaches, because they have to be measured.
Yeah, but former players and head coaches, maybe?
Oh, yeah, I mean, sure, I get it.
That matters a little more, I think.
Like, do I want to see the left tackle and the defensive end edge rusher, or the corner and the wide receiver who are, you know, chirping the entire game? Like, that's, you're asking for it, right?
Yeah, but I mean, like, when we're talking about Sirianni kind of blowing off a former player, especially a guy who was a leader in Philadelphia and is widely considered one of the, like, more respectable individuals in the NFL. And then to take a high five and start, like...
Well, we surprised the Nick Sirianni.
How'd you contribute to that victory? Yeah, but I mean, come on, dude, like,
we surprised
grow up. Like, dude needs to grow up.
This shouldn't be surprising. This shouldn't be surprising.
I mean, I'm trying to think. Imagine if this would have happened with, and I think more people would have probably defended it because of how they, in general, view Dalton Schultz as being a little moody. But imagine if this happened with McCarthy and Schultz. I think we'd be talking about McCarthy can't do that, and I don't think McCarthy ever would do that.
No,
it's just a bad look.
I don't envision Mike. Like, I don't see Mike getting mad.
Not at somebody who's been in the foxhole with, I don't think. I think somebody that he's been in there with and gone to war with, I don't think I think there's a respect level there that you would think Sirianni would have, but I guess not.
Sirianni's got, I mean, Nick's, man. He's like, that's the way he is. Right. He's just a loose cannon.
I want to power rank these issues here.
All right.
Okay? Because I think if you look at areas of concern among NFL contenders and, you know, different variables, there's several of them that exist, and Philly's is clearly this combustibility and chemistry question with Jalen Hurts and A.J. Brown, Sirianni being a little unhinged. You know, how much does Big Dom have a steady hand over things there? But I wanted to look at other contenders and see where you would rank these. Number one, Philly's chemistry and combustibility.
Mm.
Number two, the mounting injuries for Detroit. Number three, for Minnesota, the waiting for that shoe to drop of potential Sam Darnold regression.
All right.
Number four, Kansas City being 10-0 in one score games, which is historically been unsustainable.
Okay.
Number five, Baltimore's issues with consistency with Justin Tucker. So a close game, you're talking about, you don't necessarily feel comfortable with Tucker late. And then Buffalo, a 1-3 road record against current playoff teams. And, you know, potentially having to go on the road for a playoff game. Which of those variables, would you consider any of those serious concerns if you're trying to figure out their contender status?
Detroit's for sure. I mean, you just can't do anything about injuries. Like, that's...
I think the easy ones here are Detroit and Philly.
Yeah.
The chemistry issue killed them last year.
It did. It did. It hasn't reared its head yet.
It started too recently, though, and it makes it, and they lose it. Obviously, Jalen Hurts is out, but not long after that, they lose a game finally. Then they have that issue. And so,
right. Yeah. Now, they lost the game because he was out.
It could always go sideways, though.
Absolutely. You know, Buffalo, they're going to have to go on the road against a good team in the AFC.
Yeah.
They're going to have to go play Kansas City.
Yes. If you've got an instance where if Kansas City is like Kansas City wins, like we would expect, or like you guys would expect, not me. If Kansas City would win and then get to the AFC title game, Buffalo has to go on the road for the AFC title. And that has proven to be a massive challenge for Josh Allen.
No doubt. He doesn't win there.
Which matters the least here? Are you confident Darnold is Darnold at this point? Or would you say, look, if Baltimore's biggest question is Justin Tucker, then that's not much of a question?
That it's either Baltimore or Kansas City.
Which is a bigger issue for Baltimore? Justin Tucker's inconsistency or just the can't get it done narrative about Lamar Jackson? And similarly with Buffalo and Josh Allen. Just the
I think those are narrative. Bigger because it may not even get to Tucker.
I've often, like, I wonder how much teams feel that. Like, do you think there are guys on the team who go, I don't know that Josh Allen can get it done in January. I don't know that Lamar can get it done in January. Or do you think that's just media stuff? I think it feels realer with Josh Allen.
Do you think people felt it with, like, that was the narrative with Peyton in Indy?
Oh, I think people absolutely felt it with
Peyton. On the team?
Yeah, especially against New England. I think everybody just kind of what Brian's told the story before that when they finally got to the NFC title game in Green Bay and they were all excited that he was in the locker room and he saw Reggie White was not celebrating. And he went over there and he's like, Rev, what's wrong? We're going to the NFC title game. And he said, I got to play Eric Williams next week. And Brian was immediately like, we're done. Like, we're not going to beat them.
Yeah.
If Reggie can't even enjoy this, if Reggie's already in his head about having to go again. And so that mentality does, sure. I think that thought will creep into guys' heads of just like, okay, is he with us? Is he all the way here? And I think that definitely existed for Peyton at one point.
Yeah. I mean, maybe in 06, then they had to finally beat him.
And I think it definitely exists for Josh Allen to an extent.
Yeah, I don't think it exists for Lamar. I don't think the players think of Lamar like that.
I think it definitely is a bigger factor for Buffalo and Allen than it is for Lamar, because I think most people felt like Lamar's shortcomings have been around. You haven't put enough around.
No, nothing around him. Right. Absolutely. All right. Very good. It's the 6 a.m. club here on 105.3 The Fan. Let's get a little college football kegger. Another coach says, baby, hell no to the new landscape of college sports, and props to Oklahoma for what they're doing with their bowl game next in The Fan.